Welcome to the Real Talk Weekly podcast, where we discuss news, culture, life, and dive into deep conversations about our faith. Here's your host, Alan Reed.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Real Talk podcast. I'm Alan Reed, host of the show, along with Allie, David, and James. How are y'all doing?
Yo.
So good.
My feet are cold.
Yeah.
We have a simple format.
Just going to go right by that.
Thanks for caring about my cold feet.
Cool. Let's
go. What's he
going
to do?
Ignored it and went on.
What was he going to do?
We're getting this down under an hour. So yeah. I'm not going to take the bait there, James.
Got him.
We have a team of experts here who have scoured the interwebs for stories that are outrageous,
crazy,
and amusing.
And cute.
For us to discuss. Those are called our dishes. Cute. Then we have the deep dish, which typically comes from me, but not always.
Okay.
Where we talk about things that are a little bit deeper. We
go a little deeper. Alan's the deep one.
Yes.
You got to have boots on our
own. I'm the responsible one on the team. So
Thanks, Dad.
We want to hear your thoughts, your appreciations, and your criticisms, I guess. So if you have them, go ahead and post them. But we hope that you enjoy the show today. As always, subscribe to our show.
Yeah, like, that's a hard.
Share, comment.
Yep. Yeah. On the count of three, I want you to hit the like button. One, two, three.
Slam! Like!
There we go. Oh. All right. We have
a
good lineup for today. Are you smarter than a 9-year-old?
Why did you look at me when you said that?
No.
No, he didn't.
Or swallowing Legos. Hold on. What did I put? Swallowing
for
Lego.
Science.
For science.
Yeah, for science.
For science.
He's for science.
There's a typo over there.
He's for science.
He's science.
And then a golden day in Golden, Colorado.
Nice.
And then last but not least, Jesus at the Super Bowl. We'll talk a little bit about that. And so we are airing this the week before the Super Bowl. But
no, we're not.
You will have watched
it.
No, we're not. No. We are recording it.
Yes, recording is better.
But it comes out after the Super Bowl.
It's on Valentine's Day.
So this will be relevant.
Input person here or team. We should do like, congrats, Eagles. Or congrats, Chiefs. On winning the Super Bowl.
There you go.
But also happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah,
happy Valentine's Day, everyone. You better have remembered. Good reminder for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So
I have chocolates in my bag waiting.
Melting. Yeah.
They may be melting because I did leave them in the truck all day today.
Ooh. Ooh. Good luck.
Sorry, Andrea.
You guys ready for the icebreaker?
Yeah.
Okay. What was your favorite and least favorite subject in high school and why?
Well, I'm going to go first. So,
Allie wanted to go budging. First.
No.
My favorite subject in high school was history.
What?
That makes sense.
And
It does
make sense since I got a history degree.
Yep.
But also history was my favorite just because it was like all my favorite teachers were history teachers. And so I think that's one of the main reasons why I loved history so much. But my least favorite was English.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Which is ironic because in college you have to write a bajillion papers
in English,
but also on history. So it was like a real struggle for me. It was like my least favorite thing with my favorite thing to learn about.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Curious.
When did...
Don't ask me dates. That's the one thing don't remember.
What year did Columbus sail the ocean blue?
You know that.
1492.
Yeah, that. Retweet.
You say,
oh my gosh.
Right. I know the song.
So there you go. Song, okay, yeah. David's answered the question. How about you, Allie? Favorite?
My favorite subject was English.
Loser.
Of course.
And I think my least favorite was like social studies.
So
which is history. Yeah.
The opposite.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Like social studies. We had that in junior high.
Yeah.
It was junior high. It was
that's why
history,
you two get along.
That's when
so
I started
well.
Disliking
yeah.
it.
Really?
Yeah.
Very good. You guys would make a good team.
Yeah.
Because you are
opposite. We
you can write
well
the papers
together.
And I can give you the content.
Facts.
Yes.
There you go.
There you
give me the facts. James. I didn't mean like facts, yes.
The facts.
So my favorite subject in school, I don't think I really had one, to be honest. I mean, it would have been choir.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
But, you know, the problem with choir was when I was a freshman in high school, the choir teacher wanted me to be in the senior classman choir because I could sing so well.
Well, you're going to get beat up, though.
But... The problem was, no, our school went through a building
choir
transition
bullies.
My freshman year, so the normal freshman bullying never happened
well,
because
good.
Everyone was like moving to a new building, so it made everybody feel weird. But they pulled me out of normal class schedules when I was a freshman in order to accommodate me being in that class, in that choir class. And as a result, I didn't take freshman science until I was a senior in high school.
Oh, oh. No.
Because they forgot that I hadn't taken it.
Nice.
But my least favorite subject was, and you're going to probably laugh hysterically for those of you that know what my degree is, was math.
Yeah.
Because I was bored with it. And we learned that later because I was so bored with math, I never did the work because it wasn't challenging. Mm-hmm. Now, once I got into the more advanced math classes, you know, calculus, trig and all that kind of stuff, then it started becoming challenging for me. And then I actually started doing well. But initially I was like, I'm bored. Like I was taking algebra when I was in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got to be a freshman in high school, I was like, I'm not interested in this. It's boring.
Yeah. And but so, you have an accounting degree.
But now I have a degree that's technically math. So that's kind of funny.
But like accounting is like really simple math. It's like
get him.
I'm surprised that you weren't.
Well, there's some calculus in there.
You don't roasted do that. That's not even your career.
Right? There's calculus in there.
Bored.
But there's no geometry.
There's no calculus.
Put him over an open fire.
I think he just tried to say that I'm
roast
an idiot.
Him.
No, no. I was saying you're so smart, you're probably bored with your career. And that's why.
Oh, you're digging out of the hole.
That's why
now.
You're okay, I got you. Were never an accountant.
So, Alan, what was your favorite?
I just make it. I'm wasting time now. Yeah. Okay. All right.
Answer the question.
My turn. Okay. My favorite was 11th grade oceanography.
What?
What kind of school did you go to?
We had so much fun.
Arkansas schools have bowling as a
ours
class.
Ours would be like swim in the lake and look for dead bodies. So
Trumbull, Connecticut.
No, that's Northeast.
But Arkansas has bowling. I just want to point that out.
Not when we were in school.
You can take bowling as a class in Arkansas.
That'd be cool.
Hey, bowling leagues, they're intense.
Yeah. Bowling.
It takes skills.
You want to
hear
strong.
Why it was my favorite?
Yeah, I do.
We would, like, every week, we got to go to Long Island Sound and, like, play in the water, on the beach, in the marshes. We got to, like, put on these waders and go in the marshes.
Did you actually enjoy the class for the education purpose?
I'm sure I did.
So
the hands-on. I liked hands-on.
Yeah. Essentially, that was like PE for Northeastern.
Wow.
It was kind of like a PE class.
That's
and then
cool.
We did a lot of stuff like we had an aquarium.
It was probably like a remedial science like that, class. So. And they're like, we don't know what to do with these kids. So we're just going to take them to the
Marsh
beach
boy.
And let them play with the sand.
Hands-on oceanography.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what was your least favorite?
It was definitely band.
You had to take band?
Yeah, we had to take band or choir, and I hated choir more than band.
Oh, we have to do that.
You didn't have to
we
take
were,
it.
Yeah, and I was horrible. If you've ever watched me at church clapping, and I can never stay on beat. I couldn't
Where
play the
Carson
drums.
Get his
I was
skills,
I was a drummer,
okay.
And so
from
I was
mama.
So bad that they put me on the timpani drum because it was like boom, 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 boom.
You did well.
But yeah, I can remember one particular song where I was supposed to come in at some moment. You know, like where it goes. Boom, kind of, you know, rumbles.
Like a big deal moment?
Yeah, there was a big deal moment
Did
that
you do it
I
early?
Could never hit right. And like, I don't remember
the
band
teacher's
name.
Were you
the
guy that hit the timpani and then the ballot swung out of your hand and hit the person next to you?
No, I just never hit it on the right, I don't know what you call it, at the right moment.
At the right beat.
At the right beat.
It was always exciting.
And it was like 10 minutes in band of Alan trying to get it on the right. So they would back
oh,
up.
Oh, I thought you were saying it was 10 minutes late. I'm like, dude, you really missed it.
And then I would miss it. And it
you
was
were in an
like,
entirely different song.
I know everyone just like, what is he doing in here? So I hated it because I wasn't good at it.
It's okay.
But anyways. All right. Anything else we need to cover? We don't have a theology one coming out this week, but last week.
Yeah.
If you didn't listen to it, Brock and the gang. What are they talking
cool
about? Love? Was it love?
Brock yeah, yeah. So we were focusing on love, the theology of love for the month of love. And so it's a two-part series. And first part launched last week, just kind of breaking down what it means that God is love. And then part two, I don't want to spoil anything, but we are going to like try to challenge cultural love versus God's love. So it's pretty neat.
There you go. I was wondering.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. It's pretty neat.
All right.
It's time for the dish.
In lieu of our icebreaker, I think I should do my dish first.
We already did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Since because of our icebreaker, I said in lieu of, that was the wrong terminology.
Okay,
I know English major, sorry. So because of what our icebreaker was in dealing with school topics, I want to talk about my dish, which is a 9-year-old Pennsylvania boy with dreams of becoming an astrophysicist is one step closer to his goal after graduating high school.
Oh my gosh.
The kid is 9 years old and he has his high school diploma.
Is his name Taj Mowry?
No.
And he's a smart guy?
His name is David Bolagun.
Oh, okay.
Bolagun. Which the first time I read it, I thought it said baloney. And I thought, is this a fake article? But no, nope, it's real.
Yes.
It's real. The kid is in Harrisburg. He's in a Harrisburg, Pennsylvania charter school. He's a third grader, and he has been awarded a high school diploma.
Dang.
After completing classes required.
And who has that much time at nine?
I mean, maybe he did it because third he was at home during COVID. I don't know.
Wow.
But he wanted to do it because he had the ability to do it. So why not use those abilities for greater good, the boy said.
Greater good. He's a superhero.
He's working. Smart funny guy. You should say that, because he's working on getting his black belt in karate.
Right. It's wow. one thing for him to be smart, but he also.
And so he wants to be Jason Bourne.
It keeps going. This nine-year-old, has already completed a semester at the local community college.
So, how does that make those calls?
So not attending a state school. Just kidding.
Says the girl who attended private.
Listen,
yeah.
At age nine, I don't know if I was even tying my tennis shoes. Okay?
No, we were all still picking boogers, okay? So this kid's like, advanced.
He says, I want to be an astrophysicist and I want to study black holes and supernovas.
That's pretty neat. Wow.
The boy's parents also have advanced degrees and said their son is unusually gifted.
Unusually?
Yeah, I would say so.
So they describe him as he has a brain that just has the capacity to understand and comprehend concepts beyond his years. And sometimes... beyond my understanding, said the mother.
Can you imagine trying to punish that child?
No.
Because he would be like, why would you? Yeah.
I'm taking away your textbooks. No kidding. You have to play Fortnite. No!
Yeah, definitely. You have to play with this marshmallow.
What? No!
He would probably find a way.
Probably would. He'd probably figure out a way to turn that marshmallow into some device.
Taffy.
Yeah.
That he could like use to study black holes. Crazy. But I mean, brilliant kid. Can you imagine a nine-year-old? I thought I was special because I graduated high school and I was a year younger than all my classmates because I skipped a grade when I was younger. But like, this kid graduated high school at 9 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, by the time he's 20,
he's going to have like three PhDs.
Right.
So does he not have to go? So he won't have to go to school anymore.
That's right. Usually when you graduate college, unless you want to go further than that,
well, after your second or third diploma, PhD. He doesn't have to go to school, right?
He doesn't go to elementary or middle or high school,
right?
So well, if he completes 4 years in college, he'll be all of what, 13 years old?
Yeah.
And he'll be going to get his doctorate at 13. Can you imagine being his partner in class?
Oh, my word.
I would ask to sit next to him.
I wouldn't.
But also, he needs to be babysat. You know what I mean? He can't do anything.
Like, you have to wipe your lab partner's nose.
You'd have to do something to lower him down to your level. Yeah. You know, it'd just be too much pressure.
That's the thing. Like, I wouldn't want to be his partner just because I'd be like, this kid is way smarter than me, and I feel like a complete moron.
Right.
I just want to teach him about, like, child things.
I mean, let's get real.
This is a doll.
Well, here's the thing. In the picture and the video of the kid, he looks really happy. I mean, he doesn't look.
He's really smart.
He doesn't seem like he's, you know...
He did. He used some big words.
I love the commentary sometimes that Alan adds. If you watch the video, he's really smart.
He uses big words.
For a nine-year-old. Yeah.
But, I mean, I like to use big words because I want people to think I'm photosynthesis. So,
oh my gosh.
But the kid is super smart.
Yeah.
And fortunately, not all nine-year-olds are that smart. But I would like, I'm going to wander around one day during kids' ministry and just look, check out the nine-year-olds and go, you're definitely not that kid.
Good.
Good one. All right, James. Thanks. All right.
I feel like mine kind of segues nicely. Okay. Because mine has to do
also with dealing with children.
With science.
Well, science.
Oh, it's true.
And children's toys.
And children's toys.
So.
But I have Legos, so they're not just children's toys. They can be collector's items if you desire.
Sorry for the jingling of my eyes.
Oh my gosh.
So this
so fancy.
this article is about six scientists who will go where no other scientist will go. And this is for science.
Look, truly, they
so
will go.
Here's the problem. You know, parents, they give their kids toys all the time. And the problem is...
Will you just read the editor's note out loud?
Well, let me get to it.
Sorry. Yeah.
I'll get to it.
Yeah, I'll get to it. I lost my chain of thought. Thanks.
Sorry. You were saying that parents get their kids toys and it's a problem.
It's a problem because a lot of the times they give them toys that are meant for older kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up... swallowing said toy, such as the case is Legos. I can remember many a times where I used my teeth to, take a Lego piece off. I did not eat said Legos. So the problem that we have is that kids are ingesting Legos. That's a problem.
Better than Tide Pods.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
So the editor's note, here you go. It says this, this episode contains frequently and mildly graphic mentions of poop. It may cause giggles in children and certain adults.
Certain adults.
All of us, yeah. Yeah. Certain adults. We are the certain adults.
We're giggling, and I was like, you can't believe these guys are
so talking. So here's the deal. Six doctors swallowed Lego heads for science, and they said, here's what came out.
Yes.
So the best part of this whole article, they linked the actual like paper, like scientific paper.
The journal.
Yes, of like what their aim is, the scientific method, the results that they have. So my favorite part of the whole article is the units of measurement that they came up with to measure. So what they're essentially trying to figure out is how fast a person can digest a toy or a piece of plastic. I'm surprised at how quickly. So they assigned...
You want to go home and eat a Lego, don't you?
So they assigned these units of measurement to figure out how, you know, like how do they, you know, find out the you know, results. First was the stool. The
turnaround time.
Yeah, the turnaround time and like different units. The first unit of measurement.
Shipping.
Was stool hardness in transit. And I'll let you guys abbreviate that.
Oh, yes, okay.
And the second one was found and retrieved time. Mm. Otherwise known as fart.
You can say that one.
Could all say oh that. My gosh.
Stool hardness and retrieval.
So really they're trying to find out for parents how, you know, like do they need to be worried if their kid swallows this thing?
I feel like yes, as not a scientist, you should be worried.
Yes. I mean, but how worried should you be? This is how what they're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So the results were the fart score. Oh, no.
That's the whole reason why you were waiting to get to that.
You just wanted to say fart score.
Yeah, you're one of those. You're one of those adults. You're right here.
Like, there's one guy that had a super high fart score, and you're like, dude.
Oh, man, it's making me cry. It's so funny.
Did you eat beans with your Legos?
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, I'll make it through this because it's so funny.
I'll read it for you if you can't.
We're adults so average, with a 9-year-old
brain. So the average
brain.
Score was 1.7. 1 days. So that's how long it takes.
Yeah.
And the interesting, it took females quicker than males.
Mm. That makes sense to me.
My family, the males are more.
Whoa.
Yeah. I'm a little concerned about guys. I'm a little concerned about patient B in the study.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have a retrieval. It's like, does he still have it?
Gone, but never forgotten. It's still in there.
Patient B is still alive.
There's like a little Lego head like lodged in his system somewhere. Oh my gosh. Somewhere.
Okay, we'll link this article because it is very fascinating.
Too funny.
There are no pictures.
No, there's no pictures.
Yeah.
Thankfully, but we'll link their findings because it is interesting. But their conclusions were that it says it's likely to pass between 1 to 3 days, and this should offer reassurance for parents. Mm-hmm. So if you were ever worried, now you don't have to be.
But hey, good news.
Just wait 1 to 3 days for shipping.
Yeah.
This isn't Amazon Prime. It takes 1 to 3 days.
For SHATing. So what
hey,
I love
though.
You
can't spell that.
What I love though is that the fart score is less for a Lego than it is for a coin.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
I missed that part.
Well, I mean, okay. You break it down.
But you don't break it.
Metals. And acid generally don't mix near as well as plastic and acid, right?
Yeah.
They took the smallest piece with rounded edges, the head. So they kind of, if they would have used one, a square or a rectangle, yeah. I think it may have taken longer.
Yeah.
That could have caused some like damage too.
To swallow that.
So thank you, scientists.
Yes.
For these findings. The world is a better place.
We no longer have to stay up all night wondering.
No.
What would happen if I swallowed this Lego?
What do you love enough to do something like that?
History.
I mean, I love Legos, so, but I'm not going to eat one.
For $1 million?
For $1 million?
You know it comes out.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely. That would be another good topic. What would you
I'd eat a Lego and a coin for $1 million.
We'll have to do that for a
icebreaker. Some
type of icebreaker.
Yeah. I don't know how you make yourself swallow those things. That's what.
Like a pill.
With peanut butter.
Hill for dogs. Wow, speaking
of dogs. Speaking of dogs,
look at all the segues today.
Okay. This precious town of Golden, Colorado, which I'm very unfamiliar with, but it is in the state of Colorado. It's pretty much all I know. They are hosting over 1,000 golden retrievers in their streets for Goldens in Golden. It's just a giant event where they invite golden retrievers from all over to come fill their streets. So basically, it's a giant festival, but for dogs. The owners are second in command here. But there are like 20,000 people who live in this town, and so they just, their beloved canines take to the streets, run the streets for a couple days. It's a big deal. And I did text my best friend who lives in Denver, and I think she's considering attending. They don't have a golden, so I don't know if they're allowed to go or not. However, the thing that I think is very concerning about this event is if you happen to lose your dog.
How would you know which one?
How would you know?
Yeah, true.
I mean, you know, the chances of a couple of them having the same name are pretty high.
Yeah, it's true. With a thousand of them.
I know. Yeah. You're just sitting there yelling. So if you want to go, go, but also be really careful.
I would like to make an official request for the city of Pittsburgh to have pits in pits.
Ew. Mm.
So that we could
have. That would be a very smelly. Pit bulls. I know, but pits in pits is funny.
But
pit bulls in Pittsburgh.
That'd be more interesting, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet it would. Because
very grumpy dogs over there.
Yes. Ooh. Lots of fights, potentially.
I think you could actually get a lot of basketball games going on. Right? Air Bud.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Golden State Warriors.
But
no.
Okay.
Goldens are pretty sheddy, too. So I'm just wondering if there's going to be like.
Yeah, I know.
Lots and lots of fur in the streets.
It's very hairy.
Yeah.
It's a very hairy situation.
But could you imagine? Like, I'm just sitting here daydreaming about it, and I'm like,
it'd be fun. It'd be so much fun.
See, to just, okay.
Be in
a lot of people are in
dogs.
A bad place just right now with those winter blues and mental health. You just go, what?
Do you hate animals?
No, I love dogs. But, like, really? You're going to, let's make a day for my dog so I can.
How do you say no to that?
That's called Look every
that
Friday.
Look at that. Howdy, that folks. Welcome to Golden. They're so happy and sweet there.
I guess if it makes people happy.
Yeah, that's all that matters in this world.
Happiness.
If it makes you happy, then do it.
Sheryl Crow, I feel like.
I feel like, based on what Alan just said, he judges everything I post on social media related to my dog. Because we post all these pictures of our dog and outfits and cuddling and
Ashley does too.
Being really cute. And he's like, why would you make a day for your dog? Every Friday is my day for my dog.
Yeah.
Because like he stays home with me. And
I don't know.
That's probably why I have a hard time with it, because my wife is so in love with our dog. Mm,
you feel a little green monster there.
She takes 5 minutes to say goodbye to the dog, and it's like, see ya.
Well, their life is so short.
Would you rather her like come up to you and be like, I'll see you later. Oh, good boy.
That's true.
Yeah. Actually,
we got through that stage really fast.
That's usually after you hit year one or year two, you're done with that.
Yeah.
After I bit her, she
did. Yeah.
All right.
Please just go on.
All right, are we ready for the deep dish?
Yes, yeah,
we
totally should.
It's the deep dish.
So, Jesus at the Super Bowl. How many of you have heard of He Gets Us campaign? Have you heard of that before week?
Indeed. Yes.
Okay, all right. So, for those of you that have not, again, this has been recorded before the Super Bowl, but if you watch the Super Bowl, there are two big commercials that came out, He Gets Us campaign on Jesus. So, little background, there's been a handful of wealthy families. One of them's David Green. He's the CEO of Hobby Lobby. They are behind the campaign and the goal of highlighting the loving and compassionate side of Jesus. And so, which is pretty cool. I think that's good. Primarily through short videos, commercials. They can be like 18 seconds. They might be a minute and a half. And emphasizing the more human side of who Jesus is, and then with the tagline at the end, He gets us, right? Mm. They raised over $4 billion.
Oh my gosh. With a B.
With a B. That's a lot.
That's a lot
That's
of money.
A lot of money.
Think about what you can do with $4 billion. You probably wouldn't swallow think about making commercials for Jesus, but what's it?
Swallow a lot of Legos.
There you go.
Yeah.
I would swallow a lot of Legos for $4 billion.
Yeah, that's true.
So, getting back on track here.
Sorry.
I just know you guys are wanting to talk about poop. We're talking about Jesus. So from what you guys know about this, I know that you guys said that you were at a conference and you got to hear a little bit about it and everything. So have you watched the commercials? What are your thoughts on the commercials?
So I wanna jump in on this one because, okay, so the thing about He Gets Us is it's more than just commercials, right? The whole campaign is more than just about putting commercials on TV and just trying to throw the name of Jesus at people. Mm. One of the things about the He Gets Us campaign is that it's designed with the intention of, okay, so if, you know, churches can join this network or whatever, and the idea would be like here in Northwest Arkansas, if we join this campaign, they would put ads out on TV. They would pay for everything. They would do all the stuff. But then if people respond and react to whatever they get, so if they respond to the He Gets Us ad, they click on a link, whatever, It's going to take them to a place where they can get more answers. And the idea is to connect these people to a local church. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it's a fascinating, brilliant, wonderful idea that, you know, churches have tried for a long time to be in those markets, but it's just so expensive to do that.
Yeah.
And so these people, you know, being independently wealthier are going after that. But, you know, they're also trying to not be legalistic. They're trying not to be super hellfire and brimstone. You know, it really says they're trying to address the more loving, caring side of Jesus and the fact that he's a real human. And so what happens when you start representing Jesus as a human being, you can potentially misrepresent Jesus because he was fully human, but he did not have the sin nature that humans have. You know, but there was a big hullabaloo right after our conference last year about an ad that they put out. And I think it was one specific ad from what I've been able to read. And candidly, I cannot find that ad. Like, if the ad exists and I've watched it, I'm a bad Christian because I haven't seen anything wrong with it. Because the ads and stuff that I have seen, I'm like, I don't disagree with anything I'm seeing here. But I mean, it was a huge stink. Like, a lot of people coming out and saying, I can't believe we would even think about supporting something like He Gets Us. If you think that Jesus was XYZ, then you don't get him, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, so not knowing the context behind what has generated these people's responses, just what I've been able to see myself, I think it's great. I think the idea is fantastic. You know, and to be honest with you, some of the stuff I've seen in response is like, so the one of the things I saw, and I wish I could remember who wrote it, but it was, I think it was somebody with the SBC, said, if you think Jesus was tempted, you don't understand him. I'm like, but the Bible says Jesus was tempted. The Bible said that Satan tried to tempt him. So I don't agree with what you're saying, you know? And so I've just, but again, I don't have context, so I don't understand the stink, you know, but I think what they're trying to do, which is to try to put the name of Christ in a mainstream way that people can see it and receive it in some fashion, I have no problem with that. I think it's absolutely great, you know, especially since they're not just doing it for trying to get the name out there. They're literally trying to do it to connect people with a local church.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what's most important. That's how it's going to stick. That's how lives are going to be changed, is by getting involved and truly getting saved. Mm-hmm. So I think it's fantastic. You know, I know we've here done some things from time to time where we've tried to put the church name out during key times. You know, we did it during World Series. I think we've done it during Super Bowl, you know, and so, and we're just doing it in our local market. You know, these people are doing it nationally and internationally. And so, I mean, kudos to them, you know, in my opinion, for going that way. And the other side of it too, is if they really did do something where it was like, well, this is a misrepresentation of Christ. Do we represent Christ the best every single day of our lives?
Well,
you know,
I do.
Speak for yourself.
But I mean, right. Like, seriously, it's kind of one of those things, like, these are human beings, right. So they may make mistakes.
Sure.
Yeah. We don't need to crucify them for the mistakes they've made. Mm-hmm. We make mistakes a ton too. So right. I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Well, and it's really weird when you try to, like, market Jesus. Mm-hmm. So communications and marketing for the church is just a weird department to even work in, quite honestly, because Jesus is both marketable and not marketable. You know, he's not a product that you purchase, right, or anything like that. And so it's an interesting concept anyways, but I favor their commercials and their work, just because if you're watching television and you happen to be watching the commercials, a lot of people don't, you would have no idea that what you're watching is about to be a religious commercial. Mm-hmm. And I say religious because I do believe that they're Christian. If you partner with them as a church, there's no, like, they might, you know, send some people to a different denomination than you. So I can't say that they're a certain denomination or anything, but, I don't know. So it's just, I mean, it's nice that it comes across in the way that it's not hokey. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think the church is cheesy like that. I love Christian films because I appreciate what they're doing, but it doesn't always come across wonderfully. Yep. So anyways, I like their work. There's always going to be critics though,
right,
especially if you are in some of these areas where you're a believer and you're in a secular setting, like, there's always going to be a conversation.
Here's the top three criticisms that I saw in researching this, or at least I think that the top three out of them. Let me get y'all's take on it. The campaign overemphasizes Jesus' humanity, an emphasis on the idea that he was like us to the exclusion of his divinity. And so I think the people that are criticizing this, are concerned about it, would be Jesus is so much more than just a man. And if he wasn't divine, then him dying for us would be pointless. And they're missing, you know, the more important half of the stories would be the criticism. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
I was going to say, I think it's easy to make the assumption that that it is focused way too much on his humanity. But I think that's the point of the message. But the problem is too, is that the first thing that popped in my head when we were talking about this, or the possibility of talking about this, is that it creates such a, you're essentially teaching people theology based on a commercial, whether it boils down to that. Because now, if a church doesn't believe Jesus was a this or whatever, however they're advertising, like Jesus is a refugee, that was a big ad for them.
Yes.
If your church doesn't believe that, now you're going to find a church and pick and choose what church believes what you believe based off of that commercial. Mm-hmm. And so that's one problem I see with that. And that's because you're not focusing on the divinity inside of Jesus. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like anything that happens, someone's going to, like we said, someone's going to have an opposite opinion on it. Part of my problem with it too, I think there's some really great things from it. There's also very bad things from it, but this is just coming from, like, do we really think the most successful way to preach the gospel in this time and age, is it through spending billions of dollars on commercials and on the Super Bowl? There's no way to find out if that's going to be helpful or not. Mm-hmm. There's literally no way you can track that without, I mean, them giving out all their data. Yeah. So I guess it's a safe skepticism towards this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's fair. I think, you know, the idea that it emphasizes too much on the humanity, you've got 30 seconds.
Yeah.
How much of the story of Christ can you tell in 30 seconds?
Right.
That's not their intention. Their intention isn't to tell the story of Jesus. Their intention is to make a connection. Mm-hmm. And there's then, in my mind, there's an understood ownership of the local church to take it the next step.
Yeah.
That's like the pastor gets up and preaches, and he doesn't preach the entirety of the life of Jesus in 45 minutes on a Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, there is an expectation and an ownership there that someone is going to come alongside someone who sat in that worship service and made a decision to grow them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Alan, that's your job here. Right. You know, that's what you do. And so there's like this.
It's all of our jobs.
Well, yeah. But
specifically, that's mostly your job.
But yeah, I mean, like really, I mean, that's part of your job description. You should probably really get to work on that. But no, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, it's like, do they think that this is it? This one 15-second, 30-second commercial is the only exposure that these people are ever going to have to Jesus? And if it is, well, shame on us as Christians. But it's almost like they're missing the point in my mind.
Yeah.
You know,
I have a question, though. And this is just based out of the ignorance of this whole program and thing. Because y'all had a presentation of it, right? Mm-hmm. At the Metro conference.
And we got to meet them too.
So how do they pick and choose what church they send people to?
So you have to partner with them. Right. And it is costly. Like, you pay to partner with them.
And it may be that there's only so many partners per region. Like, you maybe only have one church or two churches.
But then, like, if that's the case, then now we are allowing them to dictate who we get and what we teach. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that was one thing that actually I talked with them about, because it's not a competition, but our pastor is very adamant about preaching from the Bible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel strongly that there are some churches in the Northwest Arkansas area that aren't. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to have that knowledge that there is another church out there who's going to lead you astray. When we have somebody who is preaching the Bible, like, I would much rather you have security in eternity and come here and hear the actual word of God. And so that was one of the things that I really debated back and forth, is how do we guarantee that these people are going to know it? But I think it comes down to, what is their goal? And it's their goal at the end of the day is to connect people, to make something interesting enough that it resonates with people to connect them with the local church.
From the article I read, there's actually three connections. One, they can chat with somebody and get information.
It's just ChatGPT.
No, it's a real human.
The second one, I think they could text in and someone would end up calling back, so maybe a phone call. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was a local connection. Mm-hmm. What I liked about it, when I was first reading these, and I'll read the other criticisms, I was like, oh, gosh, yeah, the videos look really good, but those are good points. But then I went ahead and I registered myself as like a partner so I can kind of see mm-hmm. what they had. They had a lot of great tools mm-hmm. for like discipling people and how to share your faith. They gave different kind of strategies for that. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, just like you were saying, James, mm-hmm. you know, really the videos are the hook. And honestly, the humanity of Jesus is the hook.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to know that God loves us, but it's another thing to know Jesus, which maybe not everyone, but most people know that he claimed to be the Son of God, or Christians believe he's the Son of God. But to see the humanity of Jesus and who he was, and you can identify with those values. So you're hooked by that. Mm-hmm. And that was their goal with that, is just to hook them in. And then it's to connect them with, I'm assuming, like-minded churches that are at this conference. Mm-hmm. Specific churches go to this specific conference.
Yes.
And then to allow them to be able to connect with them one-on-one. Or mm-hmm. if they just wanted to chat with someone online, they can do that at their level. And so I think being a church planner, I get their strategy. I can get why maybe some people who are very church, grew up in the South, maybe haven't hung out with a lot of people since high school that were maybe far away from God. Sometimes it's like real baby steps that it takes to get someone to the place where they will have a meaningful conversation with you, or mm-hmm. or go to some kind of event or something that you're doing as a church. And I just see this as one of those early stages to nudge someone closer to being much more open to hearing the gospel, understanding the gospel. The other criticism was Jesus is presented as an example, not a savior. And again, that goes back to the hook in my mind. There's nothing that in these videos or on the website that presents Jesus as God himself or to a savior for humanity. Again, they didn't want them to find the answers on the website. They wanted them to be connected to a person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I can understand if you're just watching the videos and that's all you think of for that ministry. But on the backside, there is some good intent. It may not be perfect, and mm-hmm. I'm sure we can look at it. Someone can come look at our church, and they mm-hmm. can observe everything that we're doing in ministry, and they can find criticism.
See, I was just thinking that if somebody came here on a Sunday, or if they just looked at us online, what criticisms would they have of us? Mm-hmm. Probably a lot. Hmm. Until they got here and they got connected and got involved, you know, and that you're right. They don't just want the videos to be everything and the website to be everything that they're learning, because that's inadequate. Hmm. They want to connect them with a human being or ChatGPT. They want to do something to connect these people to someone else, you know, a believer, a local church, to take that next step.
Yeah.
They don't want it to be just a surface level consumption of internet information.
Yeah.
We have enough of that.
Right.
You know, they want it to be something deeper.
Yeah. And to go off what you're saying, I think this, the whole ad campaign, isn't really focused for Christians. Mm-mm. The idea isn't pointed towards people who are believers. Right. And that's the, I think that's where the hiccup is coming, is that people who are believers are saying, well, you're missing the a ton of stuff. And you're like, yeah, you are. But it really isn't for the people that who are following Christ already. It's for people who aren't.
Right. It's not the end of the story.
Or
it's
have like a hardened heart towards, because they believe something that's not necessarily true about Christianity.
Right.
Well, I mean, I've seen ads that have been out there that are like, oh, there's many ways to heaven, including Jesus.
Right.
It's like, okay, that's not true.
Right.
You know, like I said, I don't know what ad caused such a stink.
I think what it was coming from what I researched, was that not necessarily, if you're speaking about the SBC thing, it was more or less they didn't want to get behind the campaign because it was too broad.
Yes.
Like it wasn't, they didn't want to put money into something that was way too up broad. They want to specifically send money to things that are like missionaries overseas.
Last summer, there was some specific thing about temptation that they published, because I remember reading the response to that. Mm-hmm. And it was something about temptation, and I cannot find that video.
I think I found it.
Did you? Okay, I would love to see it, because
the letter from the SBC is public.
Yeah, but like whatever it was something related to temptation. And it's like, you know, again, not being able to see the video, I'm like, I don't know. And you're right. It's not made for Christians. It's made for people that don't know Christ in an effort to get them to learn more.
Yeah. Right.
And I think at the end of the day for me, who was doing this before? No one, to my knowledge, there was no one doing it to this caliber, at least. And what I can remember is like the 700 Club popping on. You know what I'm like? That is not of interest. There was a great representation, right? You know what I mean? That's yeah. Right. You got right. to stay awake all night to even find it. And then from there, I'm just turned off by it. So I just appreciate that there is someone using money out of their own pockets to do something like this for a greater good.
And like during the major lockdowns and COVID, we published something on television, you know, that, and boy, were the responses entertaining. And the whole point of it was the world was just in, like, our area was just in the state of lockdown. Everyone was depressed. Seemed like there was no hope. It seemed like the world was coming to an end. It was 2020. And we basically published this thing that was our pastor just talking about the fact that, hey, we know right now things seem difficult. Please don't think that there's no hope. There is hope. There's hope in Jesus. And our goal behind that wasn't like, ooh, we're going to get out there and make a bunch of money off of this. Our goal wasn't, oh, we're going to get out there and we're going to become famous because we did this and we give people hope. It was literally to share the hope of Christ during a time that seemed hopeless. Yeah. And so people could criticize us, and we had lots of responses to it where people did criticize us. But our goal and our intent behind it was literally just to make sure people understood in such a terrible season, there was hope, you know. And so, and that's what we did. But so we did something similar, just not to this scale and not to this caliber. And ours wasn't something necessarily that a lot of people were necessarily going to connect with unless they were in that state of hopelessness when they happened across it.
This remind me of the conversation that Jesus had with the disciples when they were out evangelizing, but then there was somebody from not among them that was out healing people in the name of Jesus. And they're like, Jesus, we need to stop that guy. You know, he's not among us. And Jesus says, don't stop him. Because there is no one who will perform a miracle in my name who can soon afterwards speak evil of me. For whoever is not against us is for us, and whoever gives you a cup of water to drink in my name because you belong to Christ, truly I tell you, he will never lose his reward. And of course, you can kind of talk about some inferences around that edge. I think it's good for us to have a critical eye, you know what I mean, towards ministries or this or that. Not to be critical, but just to be like, you know what? We are to kind of test every ministry, everybody. I mean, I have a story of in college going into a Christian ministry, and after being there for a year and a half to 2 years, we found out he was a part of a cult. He was not a Christian.
Ooh.
He was leading people into this other organization, and this was a Baptist organization I was a part of that had somebody that was not a Christian leading it and purposefully pulling people away. And so I think we need to have a critical eye of everything, but sometimes I think in today's world we are overly critical. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with the videos, but they are incomplete. And then when I went to the website, there's not a whole lot on the website. And once I became a partner and put my information in there and I saw the backside, I'm like, I get it now. They're not putting everything out there because they want to connect them to a person. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, I like that.
I think also to kind of piggyback off what you're saying, it's important for us to be critical, but also remember that each of us have different strategies and ways that we think things should be done.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to like, it's hard for Christians to approach the culture in the culture's realms, like entertainment and movies and things like that. So like, whether you believe this is a good thing, you believe that spending millions of dollars on a Super Bowl ad is a good idea. Or if you watch The Chosen and they spent millions of dollars on that. But also, or if you think sending money to like the IMB and missionaries across the sea, like, or in North American Mission Board or whatever it is, however you're giving money, people are going to be skeptical of how you spend your money. And there's no way you can be able to track if someone is saved because of that, the dollar that you give, there's just no way. You'll never see that. Yeah. But if you believe that God the values of the organization meet up with the theology that you believe in, then that is, and you believe that's the right thing to do, then you do what you think is right. Obviously you have to take it with a critical eye, but it, there's always going to be someone who says, well, you should have spent your money elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, well, like even with yeah. the...
There's people that will say that about a church like us. They're like, well, look at that big building you built. You should have done something different
right.
with that money.
Right. And even in, yeah. in the Bible, we see the, I think the disciples are asking, you know, like the poor and the needy will always be there. You know, like, yeah. mm-hmm. you know...
Wasn't it, what you would expect Jesus right. to say.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. yeah. And so there's a lot of things that we could question and always be skeptical of, but that shouldn't lead us to not being involved yeah. in something.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
A part in the article, you know, that you shared kind of to reference, I love this, is, you know, and I'll put my own spin on it. Christians are really good for being known for what they don't like and mm-hmm. being known for what they're against. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes forget to remember we are supposed to be about love, mm-hmm. you know, so we're supposed to be about loving one another. We're supposed to be about loving the world, not loving the world, but like loving the lost, mm-hmm. you know, and it, you know, he talks about how part of this movement is to call upon Christians to reflect Jesus by demonstrating the unconditional love and forgiveness that he exemplified. Yeah. It's a reminder for us as Christians to reflect on our own actions and to align ourselves with how Jesus wanted to treat and love one another. Yeah. You know, and so it's funny that there's all this criticism against this thing.
Right. Like, from Christians.
Love the fact that they're doing something. I mean, you know, you made yeah. the comment earlier. People, if they watch programs and they skip through the commercials, how brilliant is it that they're doing it during the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
When people intentionally watch the commercials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where they're not going to be fast-forwarding through the commercials. Mm-hmm. Do you remember, was it World Series or was it Super Bowl that Christian singer that was like from 1984?
It was during a rain delay at the World Series against the Cubs and the Indians, I guess Guardians now. But what was her name? It was
I don't remember, but it was like so
Patty.
Funny.
Patty something.
Sandy Patty.
No, it wasn't Sandy Patty. She was a no-name.
Yeah.
No. Sorry if you're listening, ma'am, but she was a no-name. But she was some like
somehow
80s Christian singer that still looked like she was living in the 80s. And she had this like minute and a half long ad that populated.
Of a CD box set. Genius.
During one of the most watched games.
Was it? Genius.
Ever. It yes. was because everyone talked about it.
Yeah, everybody.
Like mainstream news media.
I thought it was just places. A local one. And I was like, no, wow,
it went,
that's funny.
It went national.
And then I saw on Twitter and like everyone's tweeting about this old.
This woman.
Gospel singer. Like that was world or nationwide.
And you know her sales went like through the roof.
I don't know. I'm like, who's got a CD player? Was it Genius?
I've got one.
My car still has one.
Oh, okay.
But you remember anyway, I bought it.
Yeah.
But you're saying like the idea of they're doing this during, and that's why we've done some of the things we've done. We knew if we did this, it cost us money, but we knew if we did this during this time, mm-hmm. it would get watched and it would have the potential to reach someone. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, they are spending this money for the Super Bowl, but brilliant because they're doing it during a time when people intentionally watch the commercials.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be talked about,
you know, and people will talk mm-hmm. about yeah. it.
Yeah. We're already talking about cool. it.
All right, guys.
Well,
awesome.
One last thing.
Yes, one last thing.
I think it's important for us to not just leave this up to mainstream or whatever the He Gets Us movement is or campaign. It's important for us to follow up in discipleship. I think that's the most, mm-hmm. and that's the problem I see with this movement if it doesn't lead to discipleship.
Yeah.
And then the local, like we said, leading to a personal connection with somebody. Yeah. And so it's important for us to look for those opportunities, especially after this Super Bowl commercials, to how can we connect with somebody? And maybe even as a conversation starter, like, did you see that Super Bowl commercial about that mm-hmm. thing?
Mm-hmm. You know, because there probably will be people that don't believe,
right.
know you're a believer and say, hey, what did you see that Super Bowl ad? You know, because, and again, I hate to beat the dead horse, but it's like, it's not the pastor's job to save everybody. You know,
it's not our job to save everybody.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, got him.
But like your pastor has his job, you still have a responsibility
right.
as a believer to share the gospel,
correct.
To witness, and it's no different in my mind.
Yeah, yeah yep. for sure.
Good job, guys. Very good.
Thanks,
if you have an opinion of your own, go ahead and post it on there. We'd love to hear from you.
And did you see the commercial?
Yes.
Did you see the commercial?
Yeah. Let us know. It? All right. Well, we will see you next week. Again, if you know someone that needs to hear, today's podcast, make sure and share it and subscribe. But we appreciate you all listening, and we'll see you next week.
Later.
Bye.